site meeting started. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Utah State Bail Bond Surety Oversight Board meeting. First on the agenda is we have a new member, Bonnie Johnson. So I believe Kathy will help swear her in and get her going.
Kathy, swear in, not swear at.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you made that clarification. All right, raise your right hand.
I, Bonnie Johnson.
I, Bonnie Johnson.
Having been appointed to the office.
Of being appointed to the office.
On the Bail Bond Oversight Board.
Of the Bail Bond Oversight Board.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
Or affirm.
Or affirm.
That I will support.
That I will support.
Obey and defend.
Obey and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office.
And I will discharge the duties of my office.
Fidelity.
Of fidelity.
Welcome aboard, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Look forward to working with you on the board here. Next on the agenda, Ryan Cooper has served his term, and we'll have Commissioner Kaiser recognize him.
I don't know if the crowd's here for Ryan or the crowd's here for Ryan. But I will, I always have a story, so I will. But my story is that I served with Kurt in the state legislature, and I had a swearing-in adventure, and I have 9 children. And so when we would have our family events, there was never enough couch space, so there were always kids on the floor. So we told them there would be a swearing-in at the Capitol, that I would be sworn in, and that I would be sitting on the floor, and they could sit in the balcony. So they were really excited that they got a chair in the balcony, and I got to sit on the floor. The disappointment came when my little 8-year-old looked at me after a long bit down the ground. He said, "I was really disappointed. There's no swearing." Ryan, thank you. This is 8 years. 2 terms, from 1st, 2011 to June 30, 2019. And I wish we could give you more than a plaque, but thanks again for your service and for all you've done with the Bail Bond and these people here and for serving on this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chance to read over the minutes and we'll adopt the minutes if we can.
I'll vote to approve.
That's right.
Second.
Only second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Mr.
Chair?
Yes.
We have an opportunity to review some of the things, make sure that it's on track with what was discussed in the last meeting.
Okay.
Perhaps we could do that under old business.
Kathy, I'll do a summary report with you next, but I'm going to give Patrick an opportunity to give us a summary on our accounting, and we can get him out of here.
Okay. Should I sit up here?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. I'm just going to use this to refer to things. So, Patrick Lee, I'm the finance director with the insurance department. I was here at the last meeting, so some of you may remember me. Just a summary of fiscal year 19. Which would span from July 1, 2018, ending June 30th, 2019. We're now in fiscal year 20, which began July 1. So what I'm referring to is just that time period of fiscal year 19 only. So during at the beginning of fiscal year 19, the beginning balance for the Bail Bond Surety Administration account was $39,913.63. During the course of fiscal year 19, the department collected $7,500 in revenues to the account and expended $11,164.29 from the account. That's about a net spend of 3,606, or net difference, I should say, of 3,664.29 during the year, revenues versus expenditures, or I should say change in the account. So we collected less revenue than the expenditures that were made, so that dips into some of the fund balance. So that means that the closing fund balance for fiscal year 19 was at $36,249.34. So that's how we're starting fiscal year 20. Already with the beginning of the fiscal year, there has been some initial revenue collection for the first two accounting periods, which would be July and August, August not being quite done, but revenues collected thus far has been $5,000. So it'll probably be a little similar to last year, but that's the bottom line for fiscal year 19 and moving into fiscal year 20.
Patrick, I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer this. Kathy made that $5,000 in revenue we've had this year. Is that from renewals this year? Is that?
Yeah, most likely. Yes. I believe so, yeah, with the Bell Bond assessment, yes.
Okay. All right, well, thank you, Patrick. I appreciate your time.
Bob,
just to be informed about that.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll move on to Kathy. Do you have a summary report, or?
Yes, so the first part on the report that is regarding the investigations, and there are not any investigations that right now have moved to the point where we need to give the board their input into an investigation, so that's why there is no information on that particular page.
Okay.
The second thing is the annual bail bond renewals. And if you look at the agency recommendation page, it does show the agencies. There is one agency in there that is has not paid the CIRCOM fees, so their license will lapse. But the other agencies that are listed there have met their requirements for renewal. And so their names are on there, and the board needs to make a decision regarding that. Yes?
The last agency, what will the official date of their closing be?
August the 14th.
August the 14th.
Now, does the board make a recommendation on each individual company, or shall we just make a recommendation on the whole lot?
Looking for a recommendation on the entire. Everybody's
right.
Met the requirements that they needed to, so you can go through either one, but it would probably be just as easy to just.
Right. I think if there's no issues with any of them, you can do the entire thing, I would imagine.
Yes.
But if there's anybody that's got an issue with any particular renewal, then you could approve everything else except that one and then discuss that one.
Well, according to our summary here, it looks like Kathy stated, everything is a renewal except for one company is a lapse. And as long as everybody on the board is fine with Cassie's assessment that we should renew and doesn't have any particular issue that they want to raise with a particular company, then we can go ahead and see if we can make a recommendation to renew them all. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, looks like there's no opposition, so all the renewals will go through.
Perfect. When I get back to the office, I will go to producer licensing and make sure that the licenses are renewed.
Okay.
Yes.
That was a quick question, Kathy. Is I think most of our licenses expire today.
Yes, and
right,
that
so
is.
We're all okay.
You'll be okay because that's why I indicated that the minute I leave here, I will go over
got
to
it.
Producer licensing and get
Thank
that
you.
Taken care of.
Looks like we have a new application.
Yes,
Yes, we do. The new application is for Freedom Bail Bonds of Utah LLC. I did check with producer licensing to see if there were any concerns on the name or any other flags that were brought up, and there were not. Daniel Reed Hart is the owner of Freedom Bail Bonds of Utah, and he's had a resident limited line producer individual license since August of 2018. I did check the courts online to see if there were any judgments or felonies that would prohibit any going further with the application. There were not. I do have a letter on letterhead from Aladdin Bail Bonds verifying that not only did he do the 2,000 hours, but he exceeded and has 4,559¼ hours. They did associate him on August the 10th of, and so he has been associated to them basically since he was licensed. I do have the qualifying power of attorney from Bankers, so Bankers has contracted with him and authorized him to represent them as part of the surety. He has filed his articles of organization. I do have an EIN number for Freedom Bail Bonds of Utah. He has licensed with the Department of Commerce, licensed with as a business with Heroin City, and he does have an operational account set up at a Utah bank, and he has elected not to do a trust account or receive cash collateral.
All right.
My only question is, Bankers only forfeitures or judgments that have been paid?
I have not received any notification of such.
Is Daniel here today?
Yes.
Hi.
All right, well, if there's any other questions from the board, we'll ask that you ask them now. I'm going to get a motion to approve his application.
Motion to approve Freedom Bail Bonds, Utah LLC.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Aye. All opposed? My apologies, you're in. Either, so we'll move on to other business. Harry, you have something for us about training, huh?
I do. So I have, according to the Open Meetings Act, I have to conduct training annually for every board and commission. And so, here we are. I'm sure you pretty much all know this, but it's required that I kind of go over everything with you again. But to remind you, the Open and Public Meetings Act, the goal of that act is to ensure that the state's business is done in an open manner so that the public knows of your business. So, and I think you guys have this in your packet so you can follow along. So I'll go through this, and then I'm also going to hit some highlights in the handbook for members of state boards and commissions. So, sorry, it'll be kind of boring.
Let me make a note here, too. Use the one with the red band up at the top.
Yeah, it says May of 2019.
The other one was another version.
There were a few amendments this year. So a public body, first we'll talk about public notice. So a public body must give notice of their meetings at least 24 hours in advance, specify the date, time, place of the meeting. The agenda must be quite specific. It must set forth what you intend to discuss and what action you intend to take. A public body may discuss things that the public brings to them, but you can't take action on that unless it was specifically stated on the agenda. Okay. A lot of this is stuff that Steve will do. So the he'll provide the notice, and he does a great job of making sure it's at least 24 hours in advance. He is very good about posting it on the Utah Public Notice website, and I guess, do you provide it to newspapers and?
The public notice site, I think, does that.
Okay. The next area is minutes and recordings. So we're required to keep written minutes and a recording of these proceedings, and I believe Steve does that. The recording must be posted on the Utah Public Notice website within 3 days after the meeting. And then a draft of the written minutes must be made available 30 days after the meeting. And then the approved minutes will then be posted on both the Utah Public Meeting website and the public body's website. So that would be the Utah Insurance Department's website. So, as I stated, all meetings are open unless there is a legal basis to close them. And the list of reasons to close meetings expands every year. So, but what I've done, I went through and I sort of just highlighted, I think there are about 20 reasons now you can close a meeting, and I've just highlighted the ones that would apply to this body. So a public body may close a meeting, it must be by vote, and it must be by a majority, and public body, you must state the reason to close the meeting. So a public body may close a meeting for these reasons. One is to discuss a person's character, competence, or health. So that is a person, not a company. So an individual. You may close a meeting to discuss pending or imminent litigation. So if this body were to be sued or you're intended to sue somebody, we could close this meeting to discuss that. You can close the meeting to discuss the acquisition or sale of real property, which I don't believe this body would discuss. The deployment of security measures, an investigation of alleged criminal conduct. There are a lot of the basis to close the meeting are really directed to the legislature, so we'll skip all those. Deliberations and decisions making involving procurement. I don't think that you guys would deal with procurement, but I thought I'd throw that out there just in case. Then there are certain areas when the meeting must be closed. Those all deal like with human services issues, reviewing, sadly, fatality reviews. You guys wouldn't be involved in those. But again, I want to reiterate that a public body that closes a meeting is required to announce on the record and in the minutes the reason for closing the meeting. And then when you're in the closed meeting, you cannot take action in the closed meeting. You can discuss what you intend to discuss, then you come back into an open meeting, and that's where you take the action. So that's where you vote. And failure to do so is a violation of law. Courts could undo whatever action you took. So and if you intentionally violate the Open Meeting Act, it's a Class B misdemeanor as well. So not only could a court undo the action you took, it would be a possible misdemeanor. Then there are provisions about emergency meetings. So I think we've had a few in the past. So a public body may hold an emergency meeting. You're not required to have the 24-hour notice on the emergency meeting, but all efforts must be taken to notify, at a minimum, the board members, and then as much of the public as possible. And then there's also provisions for electronic meetings. The Open Meeting Act states that you can only have an electronic meeting if we have rules governing that, and we do. I think way back in 2000, one or so, we adopted bylaws that allow for electronic meetings. Let's see if there's, it's important to note that, there's a definition of a quorum. So a quorum is the majority of the body. And anytime you have a quorum of members together, that needs to be noticed. So if you're out in the hallway all talking together, that is a quorum. So it has to be a meeting.
Board members only.
Board members, yes. Let's see what else. Is there any highlights I've missed? Oh, here's some kind of interesting things. So if an error was made in the posting of the meeting, so say the meeting wasn't notified, you know, you didn't get your posting out in 24 hours, you would need to reschedule the meeting. Emergency meetings should be just that in the case of an emergency, so, you know, limit those. If an error was made in an agenda item, so if you took action on something and then realized, oh, that wasn't really on the agenda, you would need to then, at the next meeting, re-vote on that. So I think the general idea is if you think you did it wrong, do it again and do it right.
So we're going to do everything over again, if that's the
case. And then do you all have this in your books? Yeah. So if you get the chance, it's about a 30-page document, but if you're really bored one night, you can't sleep, I suggest reading this over, but the governor's office provides this for every board under state government. But I wanted to just point out, because as with all boards, your boards are generally made up of people in the same industry that they oversee. So there, starting on page 16 through 19, is a section on the Ethics Act and conflicts of interest. I think that's extremely important. But to highlight, if we start on page 18, there's different approaches to take when there's a perceived conflict. So it's the individual's responsibility to say, hey, I might have a conflict of interest on this issue. And so you can notify the body that, like, say we're talking about your individual bail bond company, you should notify the body that I probably have a conflict. And then it's up to you as to whether or not you disclose the conflict, and then you either choose to step out of the room, be part of the discussion, step out of the room during the vote, or be involved in the whole process. And sadly, there is no specific law on which process take. So it really is up to you. But it's
no discretion from the rest of the board.
Right. So but you do need to notify the board of your conflict. And I think we've had like little sheets that in the past that the board signs. Do we still do that? And I'm saying in the past, I'm talking probably 15 years ago.
Yeah, to acknowledge a conflict of interest.
Yes. And Reed, you had a question?
We do.
So conflict of interest, right? So it really is the individual's responsibility.
So it's really just a disclosure requirement. If we all thought that Kurt had a conflict and thought he shouldn't be involved, but he didn't agree, he could proceed, talk about it, vote and everything, and there isn't anything anybody can do about it.
That's what this seems to suggest, yes. Now, clearly, if the whole board thinks the person has a conflict, you know, you certainly would raise that, and
right. Well, sure,
it would still be that person's
But it's that
ultimate
person's call.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, So I think that's it. Unless you have questions. I mean, if you want, you're always welcome to look at this handbook and then ask me questions.
So I don't recall that we've done a general conflict of interest form. Is that something that maybe we should do?
Well, and I just have memory of that from many, many years ago, and I don't remember where
because
we were on that. And maybe I'm thinking it for a different body.
Well, as a legislator, in fact, most public type meetings involving public officials involves having to fill out a conflict of interest form at the very beginning of each year or whatever, mm-hmm. and then that way, if you forget to disclose a conflict, it's already there, and which you can refer to that, or you can disclose it at the time of the meeting.
Right, and under the Employee Ethics Act, it states that every public officer who is an officer, director, agent, employee, or owner of a business that is regulated by the body should disclose their conflicts in writing. And there is a form on, I can't remember where it is, which agency regulates that, but I could pull up that form, and it's a one page, you know, just write down kind of who you're affiliated with, and it's pretty simple. And I do believe in reading everything that it, you all fit within the term of a public officer as a board member. So,
if anybody on the board feels it's important enough to go ahead and fill out one of those disclosures and just turn them in, and go ahead and motion to do that.
I think it's actually a safer way, you know, that way in case someone forgets to bring it up at the time of discussion, the written disclosure is already on file, so you're actually going to be safe as long as it covers that same conflict.
Is anybody in the department aware of the form that Kurt's describing that could be produced that we could sign or
Yeah, I mean, I know there is one. Yeah, there's a standard state form.
Okay.
Why don't we just have Harry send a copy to everybody and you can submit it.
Yeah. Bring it back to the next meeting.
Right.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Great. Any other questions?
Do you want that a form of motion?
We may as well. Just in the for the sake of trying to do things right and not having to do it again.
Good.
I'll make that motion.
Give a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Okay. Nothing else. I'll see you for the same training next year.
I don't need to see ever, right?
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Barry. Oh, dear. Next on the agenda, we need to elect a new chair and new co-chair.
I motion that you continue. Actually, I want to kind of go back and see if there were anything in the minutes that we still need to address.
Absolutely, we'll do that.
Kathy took care of the actions and that with the renewals and all that. On page 2, towards the bottom, had to do with publishing a rule, having to do with having financial review by the CPA. And Reed, you were gonna do the draft of the rule and shoot it out to us. I don't think I've seen it.
On removing the requirement for a CPA, I'm not sure that we ever concluded that was going to happen.
I don't.
It was a long discussion, as I recall.
Yeah, there was a long discussion.
And I don't think there was ever.
I thought there was going to be an internal rule change on that. Just to clarify.
I'm gonna look here really quick.
Boy, I don't.
No, that rule.
Well, I think the conclusion was that there's got to be a standard, and that's the standard, is to have that.
The issue was that nobody in the department was a certified public accountant, wasn't qualified to be making the assessments that Gordon was worried about having to pay his attorney, CPA to do for us. Puts the onus on his CPA, not on somebody in the department.
Right.
And so this was all in with the proposed changes to 186, and we did file or put the rule changes into effect on June 21st, and I did send that out when we filed the rule.
Oh, never seen
that. I can find the date real quick if you'd like.
Would you mind sending that out again?
Steve, I don't mean to keep beating a dead horse, but I appreciate your efforts to get us the minutes as soon as you possibly can after the meeting so that our memories are somewhat fresh, because I can only speak for myself, but when I read the minutes three months after a board meeting, a lot of times I'm wrong.
Yeah.
That's why it's helpful to get the minutes to look
right
out sooner.
Right.
Yeah. Page 3, towards the top, the chair asked how the account was funded on the on that $39,913, and Patrick said that it's listed in the statute, account is funded by the Belmont Assessment, any penalties may be assessed during the year. I've got a question, is that fund non-lapsing?
Meaning, does it carry over year after year? Yeah. I believe I asked that question last meeting, and I do believe it does carry over.
Okay, because that wasn't in the minutes, so I thought we could talk about that. Steve will make sure that's in this minutes for today. I don't have anything more.
And then to go back, we sent out the initial draft of the notice of the rule being submitted on May 2nd to the members of the board, and I think I sent it to the industry as well, and then notice of it being made effective on the 21st of June.
So it was published when and then?
It was published May 2nd. At least that was when we filed the rule. I don't know when it was published in the bulletin.
Okay.
And then it was made effective June 21st.
And you had the 30-day comment period.
Okay.
If I could, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely.
I with regards to fees and collections and budget, my recollection is that they don't lapse, but there's never enough money to cover Kathy's salary. So we subsidize, we have to find a way to subsidize that without raising your fees. So we spend that plus more, but I think if we didn't spend it, it would lapse back to general funds. So, but I'll check with Patrick. I know the latter is true. I know we have concerns that we're violating our budgetary by supplementing, but I'm pretty sure it would lapse back. We just don't spend it all. There's not adequate in there, and we try not to assess the bail bond industry additional fees. But I'll check with Patrick, make sure that's accurate, and we'll have Steve make sure that he gets it corrected in these minutes as they go out, and we have a correct report on fees, the assessment, and the allocations.
ideally, we would want to match traditional usage of that account with the revenue that comes in with licensing.
That's correct.
Business that anybody would like to bring up, I'll ask to motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Second.